Welcome to the World Cafe. Hi, I'm Kaleo. Steven Van Zandt has led an incredible life, a life I'm not sure you could replicate in this day and age. That was my first takeaway from reading his new book, Unrequited Infatuations, a memoir. It highlights the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer's career with Bruce Springsteen, his diverse solo career, and of course, his work on The Sopranos as Silvio Dante. The book is much more than straight autobiography, though. It's a bit of rock and roll history, something Van Zandt knows keenly, having grown up during the British invasion and having been inspired by the Beatles and the Rolling Stones. It's also a field guide to the art of making music, with Van Zandt doling out advice like what the five crafts of rock and roll are. But it's the stories, the "I can't believe this happened to this guy" moments, of which there are many, that really drove home my first thought. The music industry today, for better or worse, wouldn't elevate a guy like Little Stevie, making his memoir essential to the canon of rock history. We talk with Van Zandt in just a moment, but first, here he is in the band Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes, "I Don't Want to Go Home."
I don't mind if it takes all night long.
That's "I Don't Want to Go Home" from Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes from their debut album of the same name. That song was written and performed by my guest, Stevie Van Zandt, artist, musician, producer, arranger, actor, radio host, and oh yeah, author. His new memoir is out now. It is called Unrequited Infatuations. On the World Cafe, I'm Kaleo. Stevie, so nice to meet. Welcome back to the cafe.
Good to see you, man.
Yeah, so the book, I love this. I adored it. It's so good. You know what? Thinking about just the first few chapters, the first 10 years of your career, you could have written a book and it would have been entertaining. No shortage of incredible stories. And I mean, one thing that I really enjoyed about the book is it's not just straight biography. Like, yes, your life story is there, but there's plenty of rock and roll history, which I absolutely, you can learn a lot about rock and roll from reading this book. And then there's a little bit of philosophical musings about life that we learn from you along the way as well. You know, with so much music, acting, activism, it sounds like you could be sort of overwhelmed by putting all these pieces together. How did you go about blending it all?
Yeah, the main blend I wanted to achieve, you know, which is the first thing I told my editor, who was excellent, Ben Greenman. I said, listen, I want it to be a balance of mostly three things, you know, the narrative, obviously, the history, as you just suggested, and the craft stuff. OK, because, you know, I've been involved with a lot of craft. And in the end, I think we achieved a pretty good balance between those three things.
Yeah, and I think, you know, also to people listening, like some of the guides that you have for music, one of the things that I was really interested in was the five crafts of rock and roll. And I don't want to give them all away, but I do want to mention one of them is arrangement. And you said it's the favorite, your favorite of the five crafts. For people who might not know what arrangement is all about, can you talk a little bit about it and why you personally enjoy it so much?
Yeah. It's probably out of the five, it's probably the one lost craft for the most part. When recording started, and I mean 50s, 60s, into the 70s at least, there was an arranger at every session. And that's gone. You know, that went away. And I think we've suffered because of it. Arranging is quite a wide range of things. It goes from the configuration of a song, you know, is it verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, mm-hmm. or is there a solo in there, or, you know, is it two verses in the chorus, to the configuration of a song, to the which instruments are being used on that song, to what each individual instrument is playing. You know, is the bass drum part working with what the bass player is doing? It goes all the way to that kind of detail. So, and arrangement for me became like a puzzle, especially these last 2 years when I started to include background vocals, which is the one element that I never really used until recently, until I did the Darlene Love album. And she had these three great background singers. So I kept the three singer thing when I made my comeback these last 2 years with Soulfire and Summer of Sorcery.
Yeah. Is there, you mentioned some of the soul, is there a song off of Soulfire in particular that really you're really proud of when it comes to the arrangement?
Some Things Just Don't Change is on the Soulfire album, right? I think so. The song I had written for Southside Johnny, and we did on Southside Johnny's second album. I think that's on the Soulfire album.
It sure is. Let's take a little bit.
Yeah, so that's got horns and strings and girls.
Let's take a listen to it. Little Steven, Some Things Just Don't Change here on the World Cafe. All the same. Go. Some quality arrangement from a guy who's been around a lot of musicians and bands over his career and has picked up quite a knack for it, you would say, in the last few decades or so. It's Little Steven here on the World Cafe. He's my guest. The new book is Unrequited Infatuations. We're talking about music and a little bit of Steven's history. I did not have a rich understanding of the early years of the E Street Band and Bruce Springsteen. And on your way to musical superstardom, there were a few moments where, you know, it really sort of cast some doubt. And hearing the story about Bruce being signed and you going up to the studio, not as a member of the band, but thinking, hey, maybe this might work out. And then them sending you home on, you know, the day or right around the time your friend gets signed and you're not invited to the party. How did you sort of rebound from that and sort of go, like, all right, this isn't going to define me. I'm going to do my own thing.
It was a tragic moment, I must say. It was a sad moment. I quit at that point. You know, I didn't deal with it really so well. I mean, I was already feeling like we'd missed the boat. I had a feeling that we'd missed the best years of the Renaissance, and so when that happened, when I was not going to be part of the band. I just kind of quit. I didn't feel like starting my own band again or any of that. I was never that crazy about being the front man anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, it was never my main inclination, although I started off that way. But I like being a side man. I like being a producer mostly, which is what I would eventually become, a producer and writer. So at that point, I just quit and worked construction for 2 years. I quit the business entirely and only got back into it by accident. I'm playing football on the weekend, flag football, and I broke my finger. And so I took a job with a bar band to exercise as a piano player to just exercise my finger.
Yeah, the days of jackhammering were done, huh?
Yeah, that was it. I couldn't pick it up. I couldn't pick it up now either. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. So I wasn't a great piano player, but I could play chords, and that got me back into it. And that band would end up the cousin of the drummer of that band would be the cousin of one of the Dovells, which were an early '60s group. And I would go from there to the Dovell's backup band on what they call the oldie circuit.
In Vegas, too, no less.
Yeah.
Was it the Flamingo, I think you said you were playing
at? Yeah, yeah. And it was really the last year the mob was there. And I'm so glad I caught that because, you know, before it turned into Disneyland, it used to be a whole different town. A lot more fun, let me tell you. A lot more fun when the, you know, when the mob was there.
I want to play, just so people know what the Duvel sounded like, I want to play Bristol Stomp right now, a song that you got to play while you were in the band with them in Vegas. We're talking to little Steven here on the World Cafe. It's the Duvels.
The kids in Bristol are sharp as a pistol when they do the Bristol Stomp. Really something when the joint is jumping when they do the Bristol Stomp.
Whoa, 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 the sound's spinning here Friday night. They dance the greatest and they do it right. But it's the latest, it's a great sight.
The kids in Bristol are sharp as a pistol when they do the Bristol Stomp. Really something when the joint is jumping.
A little bit from the Duvels, it's Bristol Stomp. A guy who played in that band is my guest in the, you know, playing in Vegas at the Flamingo early in his career. It's Stevie Van Zandt. His new memoir is available now. It is Unrequited Infatuations. I'm Kaleo. This is the World Cafe. So obviously the book covers a lot of Bruce Springsteen stuff, E Street Band stuff. And, you know, from a music lover's standpoint, finding out some of these great songs, the stories behind them were really interesting. Like in particular, Born to Run, where you're not even, you know, playing on it, but you heard the song for the first time and you heard something that nobody else in the room heard, which I imagine is a tough thing to tell someone where you're like, hey, this isn't quite right. And it didn't come up that way, but it was an observation you made that sort of revealed the song to Bruce.
Well, yeah, it was very innocent. I didn't realize I was about to blow everybody's mind with my observation because I mean, keep in mind, in those days, I don't know, I'm not sure how many tracks they had there. It might have been 16 tracks. You know, even there was a lot on that record, and they had worked on that record a lot. They'd worked on it for like months on one song. And the mix alone, you know, must have been just really difficult. In those days, it was all manual, you know. Three, four guys would have their hands on faders and you'd have little marks on the board. You push the fader up to that mark at the right moment. You know, that's why every single mix would be different, mm-hmm. you know, because that, you know, you'd miss the mark by a little bit or somebody would, or, you know, so it was, it could take weeks just to mix something. I mean, but anyway, he plays me a song and they're all very proud of it. You know, him and his managers were also his producers then. And I just said, wow, man, it's just great. You know, I love it. And I particularly like that minor chord change, you know, on the riff. And he was like, what minor chord change? There's no minor chord change. You know, I said, of course there is, right? In the riff, you know, and what long story short, they had been working on it so long. I think that they imagined what they were hearing at that point, and what they thought they were hearing wasn't really happening, because he was bending a note in the riff, and you can hear where he was bending the note from, but you didn't really hear where he was bending the note to. So it ended up, you know, the major riff turned out to be a minor riff, which I genuinely liked. And I, you know, I was trying to give him a compliment. Anyway, so they finally heard what I was hearing.
So did they change the song?
Oh, forget it. Had to redo all the guitar parts. They had to redo the mix. Yeah.
Wow.
Oh yeah. It was traumatic, I'm sure, for them. And, you know,
well, thanks to you, you helped, I don't want to say save it, but you helped get it into a place.
Well, no, he gave me credit for saving his career at that point, and it wouldn't be the last time.
There you go. Well, let's listen to it. It's Born to Run, Bruce Springsteen on the World Cafe. On the World Cafe, Born to Run from Bruce Springsteen. My guest is Stevie Van Zandt. He has a new memoir out that you should check out. It's called Unrequited Infatuations. So music is going great. And there's this sea change that happens in the book and happens in your career, in your life, thanks to what seems like it would just be a very innocuous moment, even during the Cold War. But a moment at Checkpoint Charlie changed, like, your career and changed your, I don't know if it changed your life, but it definitely changed your approach, especially in the book, moving forward about what you wanted to do. Can you sort of set up what happened while you were there?
Yeah, the Berlin Wall was still up, and we were touring with The River, which was really our first European tour. And me and Bruce decided to go through Checkpoint Charlie into East Berlin. And, it was quite shocking to see how people were living behind the so-called Iron Curtain and in that Soviet sort of paranoia. And very, very memorable. And on that same tour, a kid came up to me and asked me why we were putting missiles in his country. And I think the combination of those two really started me thinking about politics in general. And I realized that this kid was not looking at me like a guitar player or a Democrat or a Republican. He was looking at me like, as an American.
Yeah.
And I never thought of myself as an American. Why would you? Especially living in New Jersey. I grew up with a, ex-Marine Goldwater Republican father. And, you were taught that patriotism means government is always right. And, so it was shocking to find out that we were not the heroes of democracy around the world that I thought we were. And I thought, as I began my solo career, if you can call it that, I decided that that would be my identity. I'll be the political guy, So my five albums are I'm very proud of them artistically, but I never had that breakthrough hit single, which is extremely important in those days.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to play one of the songs from those records, a track that just it's awesome. Let's listen to Solidarity from Lil Steven and the Disciples of Soul here on The World Cafe. That's a little bit of Solidarity, Little Steven, and the Disciples of Soul. We're hanging out with Stevie Van Zandt. Unrequited Infatuations is the name of his new book. I would be remiss if I didn't bring up, because of the impact, you talk about hit singles having impact. You talk about, the work that you did regarding Sun City, changed South Africa for the better. And that kind of impact, I don't know if a lot of artists are looking to have that impact, but I know some of them are. And you made a huge impact with the work that you did. For our younger audience who might be unfamiliar with what was going on with apartheid and Sun City, why you wanted to focus on doing work there?
Well, once I decided to have, political themes in all of my records, I just made a list of our country's foreign policy since World War II and just try to educate myself about that. So at the time, there was about 44 conflicts going on around the world that I was looking at to write about. And what I decided was I would see which of these we were on the wrong side of and write about those and expose that injustice. But South Africa was a little bit mysterious. So it took me two trips to South Africa before I figured it out. And I just decided that, you know, this country is a mess, and they're not going to reform what's going on. It has to go. The entire system has to go. We have got to find a way to basically topple this government, which our government was supporting.
Right.
And what was going on down there, I forget how many. There might have been, let's just say, 26 million people. 23 million were black, and 3 million were white. And the black people were not allowed to vote. So this was an incredible situation. And basically, I go into more detail, obviously, but it was slave labor, essentially, going on. And so I thought, this is just terrible, and we got to do something about it. So I came back, and instead of just having it be another song on my next album, Freedom No Compromise, I decided, you know, let's put a few other artists on this. Maybe we'll get more attention, because this subject is really needs attention. So we ended up with 50 artists on it, and hooked up with the already existing anti-apartheid movement, which goes all the way back to the United Nations establishing sanctions, and the sports boycott was in effect already. The economic boycott was going to be the home run that would cut them off from the banks and force them to change. And in between was the cultural boycott, which was our role. And we used this resort called Sun City as the symbol of apartheid, and boycotted, you know, encouraged the boycott of Sun City. And the bottom line was, it wasn't that big an issue in America. So we needed to raise the consciousness of America to the point where, when that sanctions bill crossed Ronald Reagan's desk, and he was sure to veto it because he was supporting them.
Sure.
You know, we had to raise the consciousness enough to override a Reagan veto, which had never happened.
Yeah, not easy at that time.
No. And we managed to do that with Republican votes, may I add. Rather ironically, considering what they're doing now, you know, they voted to help black people vote in South Africa, and now they're trying to keep black people from voting in America. But such is the world that we're living in. But anyway, in the end, we were extraordinarily successful, and the sanctions bill went through. The banks cut them off. They had to release Nelson Mandela, and the government fell.
Pretty damn cool, if you ask me. Let's take a listen to Sun City, Artists United Against Apartheid. It's here on the World Cafe.
We're here to talk about South Africa. We don't like what's going on. It's time for some justice. It's time for the truth.
World Cafe, Artists United Against Apartheid, Sun City, a song brought to you by our guest, Stevie Van Zandt. It's one of dozens of great stories that he shares in his autobiography / memoir, Unrequited Infatuations. I know that this is a music show, but obviously a lot of people were introduced to you through your work in acting. Lilyhammer's great, but also The Sopranos. How can I not mention this? And it was a real sliding door moment hearing the story in the book. It's not one thing had to happen. It was like a cascading set of events that started with a phone call, or not a phone call, but a conversation with a longtime friend in an office. And then 10 steps later, you're on HBO, which is kind of crazy. Yeah.
I mean, that's most of my life, though, tell you the truth. You know what I mean? You start wondering about destiny, you know, because so many weird things had to happen for me to end up on that show like that. It was incredible. And no interest in being an actor my whole life, you know. And David Chase picks me out of, you know, out of the blue. And it was just a miracle and a wonderful gift, you know, to have a whole new craft handed to you. you know, in my 40s, you know, pretty far down the line.
Yeah.
And
you auditioned for the main role, which I did not know.
Yeah, he wanted me for Tony Soprano, and I actually got it. I actually he cast me as Tony. And HBO was like, are you out of your
bleeping
blank mind? You know, this is going to be a big investment by HBO. And they were like, you can't cast somebody who's never acted before. You know, you got to be kidding. So at that point, he said to me, they won't let me cast you, but you can have any other part. You know, I can't cast you as the lead, but you can have any other part you want. And I said, well, you know, now that I think about this, David, I'm feeling kind of guilty taking an actor's job. You know, my wife's an actor. I see she goes to classes for years and goes off Broadway. And, you know, here I am, this half a hippie guitar player coming in off the street. You know, I feel bad about taking an actor's job. And he said, all right, then in that case, I'm going to write you in a part that doesn't exist. You know,
that's so, pretty darn cool.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, really.
Well, you know what? Well, let's remind people. I'm surprised they didn't have you do the theme song for this show. That well, I was thinking about that book. But let's remind people of Alabama 3 and listen to a little bit of Woke Up This Morning here on the World Cafe.
Load of us things ain't been the same since the blues walked in a town. But you want it a million, cause you got that shotgun shine, shake my body, bone in the red sun, blue moon in your eyes, yeah.
It's Alabama 3, Woke Up This Morning here on the World Cafe. We're hanging out with Stevie Van Zandt. His new book is available now, Unrequited Infatuations. So many great stories. Stevie, it was an absolute pleasure to meet and talk. Congrats on the book, and we'll see you on the radio.
Thank you, my friend.
So very cool. That's Stevie Van Zandt. His new book is Unrequited Infatuations, a memoir. We're back in a moment with more World Cafe.